Hello and welcome to the PCOS Nutritionist Podcast. If we haven't met yet, then my name is Claire. So my background is I'm a registered nutritionist and I have a background, a degree in exercise science as well, and also natural fertility education, and I have training in functional medicine. So I kind of use all of those backgrounds to help you understand what is happening with your PCOS, because I have it too, and I know how frustrating it can be when it just doesn't make sense. You're like, why is my body doing this? Why am I eating and living the same way as all my friends, and yet none of them are having fertility troubles, or none of them are having like weight gain or acne or hair loss or hair growth? And so really my job is to help you get to that, what we term the root cause. That doesn't mean you caused your PCOS at all, right? PCOS is not a really condition you can cause. It's driven by our genetics, but then our lifestyle and the way that we live in 2021 certainly exacerbates those genes. And we know that that does play a role, because the incidence of PCOS is increasing. And there was actually a new paper about this last week, about how the incidence has increased even in the last decade. So what I help you do is to understand, well, what's driving that for you? So what are those lifestyle factors that do make a difference? And then what can you tweak to improve those symptoms and also improve your long-term health outcomes as well? And what I mean by improve, you know, how we can do that is that we know that when we just adjust the way we, even the number of hours we sleep, we can either reduce our blood sugar or increase our blood sugar driven by our hormone insulin. So that's like one way. It's kind of like, think about why you would take a medication, right? So when you present to the doctor and you say, hey, I've got a headache, they'll look through all of the different medications they have to give you for that symptom. So it's like, okay, great. Well, here's the medication that's going to be best at tweaking your headache and making that better. Same thing, but in a lifestyle, what we're doing is we're trying to match that treatment up with actually what's happening inside your body. So that's what we term getting to the root cause. And that's what I help my patients do, whether that's working with them one-on-one or in my group program training, which is called the PCOS Protocol. So I do exactly the same methodology. It's just whether you prefer to learn in a group environment, with, of course, one-on-one chatting. We do that every week on our Zoom calls, so you can join in and we can chat about any questions that you've got or any tweaks that you need to be making for your specific issues. Or some people just don't like to share in a group, and so we can do that one-on-one. So that's how I help my patients to do this. So on today's podcast, I want to talk about something that often comes up when I'm talking to my woman in the protocol and one-on-one, and that is cholesterol. Now, this is something that we did talk about 2 weeks ago with Dr. Simon Thornley from the University of Auckland. We talked about how there's been a lot of misunderstanding in the research and how his background as a doctor, he was going around the wards telling everyone they should be on a low-fat diet and taking statins for heart disease. But then when he went and did his PhD, he actually found that the evidence didn't really support that. And now he does his research in epidemiology, which is basically the level of that, looking at a particular disease and seeing how common it is in a population. But he's not a lipidologist, so we didn't really get down and dirty into the different types of, say, testing for cholesterol and different things into any more depth. So that's what we're doing today, as I promised you at the end of that podcast. I also asked you on our Instagram stories, if you don't follow us on Instagram, we're at the PCOS Nutritionist, all one word, no spaces, no lines, no dots, just the PCOS Nutritionist. You can find that in the show notes as well if you want to follow us there. But I asked you on stories if you had any questions following that, and so we're going to be answering as many questions as we can in today's Q&A too. So getting into the cholesterol, let's start with what actually cholesterol is. So cholesterol is a waxy, I guess, substance, and It is mostly produced in our liver, and it is incredibly important, as in we could not live without it. It is super important, especially for producing our hormones, for example, is one of the things that it does. And so I think this probably shows you that there's been a huge misconception that all cholesterol is bad, which is just not the case at all, because we need it to do so many things in our body, especially to produce hormones. Probably even more importantly is the production of our outside of our cells, the cell membranes or the cell walls, is another, you know, incredibly important function, probably the most important function they provide. Also things like producing our vitamins and bile acid, which helps us to absorb and digest fats. So as you can see, it does some pretty, pretty important functions. So cholesterol isn't bad in it of its own self. It is when it gets into our arteries that it can become a problem. Basically, if it gets into our arteries, it causes damage. So, and when we get damage, then our immune system kicks off and we get a lot of inflammation. And that can lead to blockages in our arteries, which then leads to cardiovascular illness. So that is the actual problem, not cholesterol itself. So let's talk about what they might measure when they measure your cholesterol when you go to the doctor. So there is a cholesterol called HDL, high density lipoprotein cholesterol, and this is commonly referred to as good cholesterol. LDL, or low density lipoprotein, which is commonly referred to as bad cholesterol. So if you have high LDL and low HDL, then your doctor might say, hey, we need to do something about this, maybe give you a statin or something to reduce your LDL cholesterol. That is a bit oversimplified, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Then we have triglycerides. Now, triglycerides, or TAGs, T-A-Gs, or TG sometimes they're called. Now, they're the most common form of fat in the bloodstream. Now, when you eat, enzymes in your gut break down fats into fatty acids, and then they're reassembled to create triglyceride particles, and that's what is measured when you get high, or you know, your triglycerides measured. And then total cholesterol is, so when you're looking at your blood test, you might just look at that one because it looks like the total number. Now, this is the most simplest and the least expensive test. It includes both the good HDL and the bad, quote unquote, bad LDL varieties, which we'll talk about again. That's a bit oversimplified, but that's, it kind of doesn't really give us a lot of information, that total cholesterol level. And so most of the time, so most countries in the US, UK, New Zealand, Australia, that will be what they measure: total cholesterol, HDL cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, and triglycerides. But as I said before, cholesterol is not bad. Cholesterol is actually essential for your body to work properly. But what we're trying to find is there a good marker? Is there a good blood blood test. Is there a good blood test that we can do that can tell us what your risk of heart disease is? Because that's what we really want to know, right? Actually, the level of cholesterol, it doesn't cause the heart disease. It is the level of cholesterol predictive that you're going to go on and develop heart disease? And this is where it comes down to what are we actually measuring, and is that a good indicator of our heart disease risk? And so some of those measures, the HDL cholesterol, LDL, triglycerides, total cholesterol, many of them are not great markers of our risk, and some of them are much better markers than others. So that's what I want to talk you through today as well. If you have been told that you have high cholesterol, or have a family history of early heart disease, so if you have people in your family that have had heart disease or died from heart disease in their 50s and 60s, then what things should you be looking out for to understand what your risk might be? And then, depending on what that is, are there things that you could do to reduce your risk? And I don't just mean lifestyle choices. There are also some fantastic medications that you could be talking to your doctor about if you are at risk of these. So when it comes to figuring out what your actual risks are, those measures I mentioned before, the really common ones, the total cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, HDL cholesterol, and triglycerides. So starting with triglycerides,
These are actually a far better marker that your insulin isn't functioning properly. So if you have high triglycerides, very, very, very likely that you may have some insulin resistance. So that's where I'd look to first. If once you've addressed with your insulin, maybe that's with, so insulin is your hormone that controls your blood sugar. So if your insulin isn't working properly, you will have high insulin and maybe high blood glucose as well. And in many cases, high triglycerides. So that would be the first thing, is getting your insulin checked and seeing if that's high, or trying to address your insulin, maybe with diet and lifestyle and medication. And if that comes down, but your triglycerides don't, yeah, then maybe look further. But that's very much the most common thing I see. When it comes to HDL cholesterol, again, remember from last, well, 2 weeks ago podcast with Simon, high HDL is a good thing. So it's the opposite. You want more of that one, not less of it. Low HDL is one of the better predictors of whether you might be at greater risk of heart disease. High LDL cholesterol is the one that most doctors will pick up on, but it's not so great. It's not one of the better indicators. The reason it's has been thought in previous years that LDL cholesterol was the bad cholesterol comes from the fact that when you take a statin, which is a drug, it lowers your LDL cholesterol and it improves your risk of heart disease. So it lowers your risk of heart disease. So therefore we think that, well, if heart disease goes down and LDL goes down, then therefore LDL must be the bad thing. It must be the thing causing it. But there's a bit of a problem with that, which means that the statins could be doing something completely different. Yes, they might be lowering the LDL as well, but that might not be the thing that's causing the problem. But the way that cardiologists and lipidologists measure cholesterol has had a rapid advancement in the last 70 or so years, and they've actually found that there are better markers for your level of disease risk. And one of those is called your ApoB. Now, this is, otherwise it might be called LDLP or LDL particle number, and that has been shown time and time again in the research to be the best predictor of heart disease or cardiac, what they call cardiac events, so your risk of having a stroke or having a heart disease, heart attack. And as I said, that's been shown in pretty much all of the major meta-analyses and studies that have been done recently. And as I said, this can be measured in the blood, something that, as our technology of measuring cholesterol has gotten better over the last 70 years, we can now measure this. It's not one that's commonly offered, especially not here in New Zealand, UK. You may have to ask for this. I do not know. I do not know who can order it or what have you, because this is not my job. But I'm just saying that based on the research, this is the best that you can get, one of the best. Tends to be more readily available in the US. So do what you want with that information, but I'm just saying that that is a far better marker of your risk, especially if you have, as I said, had a high cholesterol reading. You really want to know what that actually means. Is this a problem? And that's when you'd want to maybe go and get the ApoB done. The other one that is a very good predictor of heart disease risk is something called LP little a, written capital L, small p, brackets, small a. And about 1 in 10 people have a high LP little a, which is the greatest genetic driver of whether you're going to develop that clogged arteries. Now, this is especially in people that develop heart attacks young. They think that it's generally caused by this LP little a in most of those cases. So if you do have a family history of people having heart attacks or strokes young, so probably we're talking about there in their 40s, 50s, early 60s, then it's probably a good idea to find out if you are a high LP little a carrier, so genetically. And that's a really good thing, because if you do know that you are a carrier, you either are a carrier or are not a carrier. So it's not something like, LDL cholesterol, which will likely increase with age. An LP little a carrier, you are either a carrier or you are not. And the new European guidelines say that you only need to get tested once in your life to determine whether you're okay or not. So it's one of those ones that, as I said, pretty sure that this doesn't change with age. Now, if you are part of a family where your blood relatives have had cardiac events, so again, what we mean by cardiac events is any strokes or heart attacks, cardiovascular illness early on in their life, so 40s, 50s, 60s, and this is probably something you want to talk to your doctor about getting a test for, because if you then know you are a carrier, there are likely a lot of things that you can do earlier on in your life to reduce your risk. And as I said, many of those might not be lifestyle, they might be more like medication, so something that you should have a conversation with them about. So then what actually causes high cholesterol? Now, I know that many of you will have been told by your doctor to stop eating fat, or many of you have been told to stop eating eggs. Actually, I did a recent poll on Instagram about that this week, and I asked you how many of you who have high cholesterol have been told not to eat eggs. And 37% of you said that you've been told not to eat eggs, which doesn't sound as much. You think, oh, well, it's what, only just over a third, or 40, almost 40%. But considering this advice changed way back in the mid-2000s, I think it was somewhere between 2005 and 2009, I found a, definitely there's a meta-analysis that was done in 2009 on this, which categorically showed that it does not, eggs do not increase or do not cause high cholesterol. But I remember being told this at university, which, well, to be fair, I was at university between the years of 2004 and 2009, so it could have been any time there. Memory's a little bit hazy. I have a feeling it was a bit earlier than that, though. I have a feeling it was more like 2005 that I learned this information. And I wasn't just studying any random course either. This is not like I was told this while studying politics. This was in, you know, one of my nutrition papers. So the thing is that eating cholesterol has very little impact, if any, on the cholesterol levels in your body. The reason for this is that there are two types of cholesterol. So it exists in two forms: unesterified or free cholesterol, or esterified cholesterol. So don't worry too much about what they mean. The main thing for you to understand is that the form determines if we can absorb it or not, and if we can store it or not. So the esterified cannot be absorbed because it is just too big. The actual size of the molecule is too big. And over 50% of the cholesterol in our food is this form that's too bulky, that's too big. Secondly, only 25%, so only a quarter of our cholesterol comes from what we eat. The other 75%, so the vast majority, is made in our body. Mostly by, well, 20% is by our liver, and then mostly the other 80% is all our other cells in our body. So the majority of cholesterol is actually stuff that we're creating ourselves, not what we are eating. So the reason for recommending to people not to eat eggs if they have high cholesterol is because the yolk in eggs has a lot of cholesterol in it. So it made sense that you were saying, right, well, if cholesterol is bad and high cholesterol is bad, then we don't want to raise that. And if we don't want to eat food that's got a lot of cholesterol in it, right? And that's where the recommendation came from. But now, having proven that cholesterol in our food cannot raise our cholesterol in our body by a significant amount, or if at all, we now know that that advice is actually null and void. And most of the recommendations around the world, dietary recommendations, have adapted to fit that. I know our recommendations in New Zealand have, I know they have in Canada as well, possibly in the US, they haven't quite caught up yet. So if you are in the US, just remember that, yeah, man, it's been, what, at least 12 years, possibly more, since we knew that research. That can be how long it takes to actually change a lot of these recommendations, and especially for that to filter down into your general practice medical doctor, who has obviously so many conditions that they need to know about, and often just don't remember or take in all of the different things they have to pass on. So that is the lowdown on eggs, though. So please, if you have been told that you have high cholesterol, please know that you do not need to avoid eggs. So then what does cause high cholesterol? And to talk about this, I'm actually going to step away from talking about food, because as you'll hear in a moment, there are other things that are more important than food when it comes to high cholesterol. The first is, so I'm going to talk about three factors, and this is not an exhaustive list by any means, but these are the three that I see most commonly in people with PCOS, and it's just really important ones to go through. So the first is insulin resistance. The second is hypothyroidism, a really common underdiagnosed condition. About 25% of people with PCOS have a thyroid condition, have hypothyroidism or thyroid antibodies. And then the last is genetics. Okay, so first being insulin resistance. So I talked about this before, that this can raise triglycerides. Now, insulin resistance, remember, it's your hormone that controls your blood sugar, and 80% of us with PCOS have insulin resistance, meaning that our bodies produce too much insulin and our blood glucose often skyrockets in response as well. So we have too much blood glucose and too much insulin, and this is otherwise known as pre-diabetes, and then it can progress into type 2 diabetes. So this is one of the primary causes of high cholesterol and is also linked with heart disease risk as well. And so this is one of the main drivers. Second is hypothyroidism. Now, your thyroid is a gland that sits at the base of your neck, and it produces thyroid hormone, which is used by almost every organ and cell in your body. It has so many different roles in the body, and you can see these just from the symptoms that having too little thyroid hormone can cause. So hypothyroidism means, hypo means low, so low thyroid, your body is not producing enough thyroid hormone. And if you have hypothyroidism, some of the symptoms can be constipation, for example, which just shows how important your thyroid is for your bowels to work properly and move your stool through and out your anus. Other things that can be, you can start losing your hair. Again, and this shows another important role that thyroid, you think, man, how could your hair and your bowels be connected? Turns out they can through your thyroid hormone. It also has a role in your metabolism, so people can gain weight even with no change in their diet. It can also lead to feeling really brain foggy, low motivation, fatigue, just chronic fatigue, feeling like you could sleep all the time, cold hands and feet, or feeling cold all over. All right, some of the symptoms. Now, you might not fit many of those, but you might still have hypothyroidism. So, right, these are just symptoms that could point us to the right connection. Now, we know that how much hormone your thyroid is producing and your cholesterol levels are intimately linked. So having low thyroid hormone means that it actually causes high cholesterol. So, and what they have found is that can actually be fixed after treatment with the normal thyroid replacement hormone, which is called levothyroxine, and getting your thyroid back working optimally. Now, this is the case so that when they've done studies, they've found this in people that have what's called overt hypothyroidism. So they're, when you get a thyroid test, you'll look at the lab results, and you'll see there that the lab has a range on what they call the normal range. So it might be from 2 to 6 is the normal range. And so if you have overt hypothyroidism, that means that you are outside of the range. So you might be a 7, for example, or in this case with hypothyroidism, you might be a 3 or a, did I say 2? A 1, I mean. Now, these are fake numbers, okay? I'm making this up. These are not real numbers. But just trying to explain to you what hypothyroidism would look like. And then, so what they found is that when they treat you with levothyroxine and they get your levels from 1 up to, say, 3, then suddenly your cholesterol goes down. So that's what's called overt hypothyroidism, when you're outside of that range. But they found that even those with what's called subclinical hypothyroidism, so when you're not like way outside of the range, but maybe you're close to it. So instead of being a 1, maybe you're just 2.5. Okay, so you're not outside of the reference range, but on a scale of 2 to 6, you're definitely in the bottom quartile. So what they found is that even people with just the subclinical hypothyroidism, that may also help them as well. So the treatment with levothyroxine may also help them improve their cholesterol markers too. Now, this may not happen for everybody, but it's certainly one of those cases where I say, whenever I see someone with high cholesterol, I'm saying to them, hey, let's try and get to the root cause of that. Is it that actually your thyroid isn't functioning properly and that's what's driving up your cholesterol? Or is it that your insulin is doing that? So my method is to try and address those issues first. We'll look for first and see if there is any connection there. And then if there is, we adapt. For example, if it's thyroid, you know, refer them to a doctor to get levothyroxine treatment and retest again and see if their thyroid's normal. Or if it's insulin resistance, we use, you know, medication for that and also change their diet and lifestyle to suit. And then if their insulin improves and their cholesterol improves, brilliant. If it doesn't, that's when they might need to go and get some further testing to see what else could be causing that. And the other cause, of course, is genetic. And this is where I mentioned before just one example of how your genetics could influence your cholesterol, and that's with the LP little a. And there are likely many other genes that influence cholesterol, but you might not have the LP little a. That is out of my scope of practice. But what I would say is that I often see people that have both, say, what's called familial hypercholesterolemia, so a family history of that, but not the LP little a, and they also have insulin resistance. And we still do find that even though they've got this familial hypercholesterolemia, if we address their insulin resistance, their cardiac risk or their cardiovascular risk improves dramatically. So it's not that you can't do anything about it. If you have, even if you have a genetic familial hypercholesterolemia, remember I'm not talking about LP little a here, that's a bit of a different kettle of fish. But if you do also have some insulin resistance, then often fixing that can improve your cholesterol levels and your cardiac markers dramatically. So I can almost hear you through the headphones sitting there saying, come on, Claire, just cut to the chase. You're a nutritionist. We've all come here to learn about what we should eat and what we shouldn't eat to lower our cholesterol. And the really frickin' disappointing answer for you and for me is that it's not as easy as that. It's very, very vague about what influence our fat intake has at all on our cholesterol levels, which is quite different to 10 years ago when I first started studying nutrition, more than 10 years ago now, Claire, showing your age, more like 15, 16. But when I was studying, it was very clear. It was HDL is good cholesterol, LDL is bad cholesterol, everybody should be on a low-fat diet, and the only fats should be coming from unsaturated sources such as olive oils, and completely avoiding saturated fats such from animal sources or coconut oil, etc. Now, that is becoming less clear now about how much of a role fat plays. I would, if someone had come with me with high cholesterol, I am still going to err on the side of caution a little bit there and recommend to them that most of their fat in their diet should be from unsaturated fats. So olive oil, avocado, and especially getting as much of as they can from fatty fish, which contains omega-3s. And those omega-3s contain something called EPA and DHA. And this is probably one that we have more research on, is high amounts of those EPA and DHA. DHA can improve cardiovascular risk. So the actual amount, if you really want to be evidence-based, is 4 grams per day of EPA. Now, that is quite a lot of EPA. I would say that you're probably going to try and aim for having fatty fish for one meal almost daily, and then probably also taking a supplemental EPA as well. So just be aware that is actually a lot of EPA. That's not just omega-3, that is just purely the EPA part of that, for those that really want to know the very nitty-gritty details. So that is probably the one that I would focus on, and then I'd focus on mostly using, you know, to cook olive oil. I don't care about this, you know, you might have heard, can't cook with olive oil, the smoke point, whatever's too high. I'm I'm not convinced by that yet. I'm waiting to see something that's going to convince me otherwise. But I would use olive oil mostly for my oils, and I would be using other fat sources like nuts and seeds and avocados. I would be trying to limit my intake of saturated fat, so I'd be having like lean cuts of meat instead of fatty cuts of meat. I would be using, as I said, more olive oil instead of butter for cooking, and instead of coconut oil, because that's also a saturated fat, so I'd mostly use that. It's not that you need to be super anal retentive about this. It's not like you can have to say, oh, I have to, if I'm going to have a piece of cake once a fortnight, it has to be made from olive oil, which tastes yuck most of the times, to be fair. I would more just say, hey, where I can, I'm going to just mostly be using those other oils. Still have your butter for your cake every now and again, okay? I think that that's probably going a little bit too far when it's only an occasional food. But things that you use often, maybe it's like condiments, I found is quite a common one, which often I use different, like, not so great oils. So I make my own. It's called my like speedy mayo, and it's literally, it takes 2 minutes. You just put all the ingredients in a jar and whiz them up with your like stick whiz thing, and it's so good, and that's so much better than what I can buy from the supermarket. Or if you want to, you know, they now have them, I know, in the US. I think the primal ones are really good. Just look through your kind of sources, and where you can, make up your own from like some olive oil and balsamic vinegar and stuff like that, as opposed to the shop-bought ones, which often contain pretty nasty oils. So just, that would be my advice, is still, if you do have high cholesterol, maybe just err on the side of caution about the saturated fats. I definitely wouldn't say you need to decrease your fat intake, where you get that from, and mostly prioritizing those fatty fish, as I said. So that's fats. Again, pretty unclear, but I err on the side of caution to say mostly the fatty fish and unsaturated fats. But what is a bit clearer is the effect on sugar and cholesterol levels as well. So what they have found is that your intake of sugar, such as sucrose, that's your table sugar, high fructose corn syrup, they both increase your levels of triglycerides and the ApoB. Remember, that's the one that was the really good marker of whether you're going to have a cardiac event, and it reduces your LDL cholesterol as well. And when you remove that sucrose and high fructose corn syrup, then your levels get much better. Now, having fructose by itself, say, isn't, because fructose comes from fruit, but remember, high fructose corn syrup is really a concentrated fructose that's often used in things like soda. But having fructose alone, so just from fruit, probably isn't a big deal, right? It's only when it's in that high fructose corn syrup, or when you've got fructose and glucose combined, as in sucrose, which is your table sugar, that might be what is most important. The other thing that we have seen from the research is that having fat in your diet, when you don't have a lot of sugar and fructose, your triglyceride levels and your cardiovascular disease markers do not get worse. Okay, and that's why I was saying before, it's so unclear cut about the role that fat actually plays, when some of the earlier studies showed that it was terrible for your cholesterol levels. So that's why we say, well, actually, maybe it's far more to do, and this is what the new research is showing, far more likely to do with insulin resistance and sugar levels and high fructose corn syrup consumption than what it is to do with fat. So my summary of advice is to try and work out why your cholesterol might be high. So do some testing on your insulin, or come and work with me and I can help you with that in the PCOS protocol. Get your thyroid levels checked, especially if you have some of those symptoms I mentioned before. And then also, if you have had a few of your relatives who've had early cardiovascular disease and heart attacks or strokes, then maybe get checked for that Lp(a) genetic risk as well. And then if you do have high cholesterol, as well as trying to fix that underlying root cause, if you do have, say, insulin resistance, is to focus on a very high EPA diet from omega-3s, so lots of fatty fish and maybe a supplement of EPA as well, and then try and reduce your sugar consumption. And as erring on the side of caution, most of your fats should come from unsaturated sources as opposed from saturated sources. So that is it for today. I hope that you enjoyed that and found that relevant for those of you that do have high cholesterol, and it's helped you understand a bit more about what those numbers mean and if they do have relevance, or maybe what might be more relevant to you. And if you want help understanding more about your health and your PCOS, I would love to work with you in my PCOS protocol program. I can't wait to chat with you on our weekly Zoom calls. So if you want to know more about that, it's my 12-week program to really help you identify what's driving your PCOS symptoms and then what lifestyle changes are going to have the biggest impact for you. And it's not just diet, right? We're not just going to put you on some keto diet and see you away. It's about identifying those really, really important other lifestyle things that you can do, which does not include going on a ketogenic diet for most people, and things that can really help you improve your, not just your symptoms, but also your long-term health as well. And that includes stuff like improving your cholesterol and heart disease risk too. So to find out more, head to thepcosnutritionist.com/thepcosprotocol, or just hit program from the main menu, and it's PCOS protocols under that, where you can join up. Or if you're really struggling, need some help, then please contact us at hello@thepcosnutritionist.com, and more than happy to help. So thanks so much for tuning in with me, and if this has helped you, we would love if you could leave us a review. It's super easy on iTunes, and it would mean so, so much to us. So thank you so much in advance for doing that, and stand by and listen to the medical disclaimer. See you next week. Now stand by for our disclaimer. The information contained in this podcast has been prepared for the purpose of providing information, including about the PCOS Nutritionist products and services, and is designed to support clients' overall wellness. It is not intended to provide medical advice or designed to rectify, treat, or cure any specific medical conditions or diseases. Nothing stated or shared in our podcast is intended to be and must not be taken to be medical advice. Please seek the advice of professionals as appropriate regarding the evaluation of any specific information, opinion, advice, or content contained in our podcast.